Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, listeners, wherever you are listening from. Welcome to a new episode of Eval Edge, a podcast series that is hosted by the European Evaluation Society that focuses on cutting-edge topics in evaluation. My name is Valentine Gandhi. I'm your host today, and I'll be joining with my colleague, Elena Lepo, who is a board member of the European Evaluation Society, as well as Leah Corsetti, our master DJ in the background.
Hello, everyone.
We are very pleased to introduce today as our podcast guest, Dr. Caroline Fonseca, and she has been working in the development field for over 20 years. Her focus for the past 17 years has been on monitoring evaluation. She holds a PhD in public policy, as well as a master's and a second master's in biology. She's worked with a range of stakeholders, including USAID, NASA, has taught in universities and mentored young and emerging evaluators on use of monitoring evaluation and learning methods, has conducted several research and published in peer-reviewed journal articles, and also presented at conferences. She has also worked in conflict zones and non-permissive environments, such as Afghanistan and Iraq. She currently serves as the technical director at MSI, which is a Tetra Tech company, and oversees two USAID third-party monitoring platforms, one in Nigeria and the other in Venezuela, based out of Colombia. She has been testing and using the utility of innovative approaches using artificial intelligence, especially in the use of qualitative analysis for third-party monitoring, which is what we'll be talking about today. Welcome to the podcast, Caroline.
Thank you. Thank you, Val. Thank you, Alina. It's really a pleasure to be here today. So excited to talk to everyone.
Thank you, Caroline. To begin this discussion, we'd like to ask you about your experience, especially in the use of artificial intelligence, particularly ChatGPT, and how you have used in the field of third-party monitoring within monitoring, evaluation, and learning. And it'll be useful for our listeners if you also introduce a little bit about what ChatGPT is and how it has practical use for the field of monitoring, evaluation, and learning. Over to you.
Thank you. Great, Val. Yeah. So third-party monitoring, which is just basically a type of monitoring that typically happens in very dangerous areas or non-permissive areas where neither the donor or, say, the entity hired to do the monitoring can monitor. So they hire a third party or another group to collect the data for them. And that's typically what we mean by third-party monitoring. What's really fascinating is the speed at which technology is moving outside of the monitoring and evaluation, and I'll add learning space, that we tend to work in development. And there's been limited use and application at this time, although I think that will grow, in incorporating things such as artificial intelligence or AI or chatbots or applications such as ChatGPT. So I'll sort of share two examples, one being the use of ChatGPT in qualitative analysis in an activity we did in South Sudan, an evaluation, and the use of an AI-based application for warehouse monitoring in Nigeria. So ChatGPT is basically, it's based on a large language model. Think of it as a process through which a large amount of information is inputted into this. I'll make it very simple, into this application. It's a window online. You just dump a whole bunch of text, and then this algorithm processes the text in a format that you're sort of trying to either identify a pattern, identify certain words, and in essence, simplify or summarize according to whatever plan syntax you give. So let me give you an example. You might dump a series of interviews, which is what we did, and ask ChatGPT through a very specific sentence, which is sort of directions to ChatGPT. That's sort of the easiest way to say it. And ask ChatGPT to please take a look at the information we have dumped into the window and summarize across it for X, Y, and Z themes. In our case, we were looking at where collaboration was happening. We were looking at were there differences between men and women in terms of their responses. And so we were able to do that quite quickly and quite efficiently in a matter of seconds, really. The key with ChatGPT is that unlike any model you might run, unlike any directions you might give, you have to be very specific. So you want to practice, you want to run sort of different orders to your request, to your question, to your model, and see if it's outputting the information in the order, in the clustering that you're looking for that's useful to you. That's sort of the first example. That's in qualitative analysis. And the reason that's important is because our budgets are remaining the same are getting smaller, and the demands are getting larger in terms of what people are looking for, in terms of what people want, your clients or your stakeholders need. And so their timelines are shorter, but the budgets are remaining the same. So we need to speed up that process, and ChatGPT allows us to do that. The second example is a little bit different. It's not the use of ChatGPT, but it is using an algorithm, an AI-based algorithm. And this is an algorithm that learns. This is something that with practice, with more input of information, of data, of libraries of information, it gets better and better over time. In our case, we really wanted to see what it could do to improve the efficacy of our monitoring of warehouses in Nigeria. We collect a lot of data, spend a lot of time, but the places we collect data in are quite dangerous. We often have to shorten our trips. Sometimes we can't even get to the locations. And so the use of this AI-based algorithm would allow us to speed up that process, increase the safety of our teams in the field, but also just reduce the burden on participants.
No, thank you so much, Caroline. This is quite fascinating. One of the things with regards to technology that as evaluators we see, or even as development professionals, is sometimes technologies can be a double-edged sword, and it can amplify existing, you know, socioeconomic problems or lack of contextual awareness. And the rate at which, as you rightly said, technology expands can lead to challenges and, you know, ethical issues that are emerging and can be counterproductive in many cases, especially the fear is on bias and other things. What is your take on this? Can you think a language model such as ChatGPT and within the larger field of AI, what are some of the constraints and ethical challenges that we can foresee, and how do we, you know, prepare for that? And how do we ensure that we get the benefit without, you know, the risks?
You know, that is a really good question. And I would say, especially in the world of AI, and I'm going to include ChatGPT sort of in this conversation as well, there is a big ethical conversation going on about AI. And it is rightly so. And it is one that each community, each country is taking on and has a different perspective. We do not spend enough time, I think myself as practitioners, I try to, but I think everyone can always do better. At the very start, even at the design phase, one, including participants and stakeholders in that design process, understanding what is acceptable, appropriate within the community you're going to work in, the type of information you're gathering. So for example, we in our South Sudan example wanted to figure out, is ChatGPT appropriate and at what point in our methodology or process? Now, this is regardless of whether it's a new technology, whether it's AI or not AI, you should always be asking these questions, as most of us probably do. Any methodology can be inappropriate or cause harm. So we always want to sort that out very much at the front end. And so this goes beyond just consent in terms of a person participating or not participating, but, you know, in terms of whether interviews is appropriate, gathering people in groups is appropriate, those kinds of questions. For the case of ChatGPT, we were really worried about how it would actually synthesize our data. So we took a very much so, I would say, applied approach. So a learning approach. By that, I mean, typically a traditional process to analyzing text or say interviews or focus groups in our case, both of those. We look at the data, the text comes back to us, probably translated in many cases. So there's already a bias built into that. And then we look through the text and code it, right? That's the traditional approach. And sometimes we use software. In many cases, we use software. Most people are probably familiar with InVivo or MaxQDA, those types of qualitative software that's used. Now, when you're coding these segments of text, you reduce bias by doing it as a group. When you enter this information to ChatGPT, you're often wondering, well, how is it A, coding the text if that's what you're asking it to do, or clustering or grouping together the information? And so we decided after doing some research that it was still unclear to us where all the bias might be in that process. And we wanted to use it in the middle of our analysis. So by that, we coded traditionally as we do in a group the text. And that allows you to make sure that everyone's coding the same text in the same way. That's one way. The nuance that comes through in the text, I was worried that ChatGPT would lose it. And I'll tell you sort of what we learned, which was it was quite effective at capturing even some of that. And I think it will get better even with more time. We decided to code it and then add the coded segments, one, to preserve privacy, make sure all PII was stripped. So that's sort of like private information that might be easy to identify someone, right? So we wanted to make sure that didn't happen. And we always strip names or anything like that, but we're extra careful in conflict zones or in non-permissive environments. And so by entering pre-coded information, all we were asking ChatGPT is to take that information and then cluster around specific themes that we were interested in better understanding. Now, our team also coded some by hand traditionally as we do it to see how these would differentiate. What we learned is ChatGPT found themes that we actually missed and overall matched the themes that we were identifying through our regular process. So that was a great learning experience. I think we haven't done it enough, tested it enough to know where all the sources of bias and how to mitigate these sources. So we're still learning that. In terms of concerns, I would say ChatGPT is appropriate for us because our interviews were very simple and the text we received back was very short. I don't know how ChatGPT would perform on our more regular interviews, which tend to be many pages of transcripts, a lot of texts, and some of it very rich, dense, and or nuanced. I'm still unclear as to how ChatGPT will do with that. So that's for us to still test and learn into the future. Studies are coming out telling us that ChatGPT can do that and so much more. I don't know. I will tell you that many of the software, such as InVivo, such as MaxQDA, they are already starting to add an AI component. So they're already folding that into that, very much so like ChatGPT. There is a big concern about ChatGPT in terms of its public use, them as a company and or using your data to improve their quote unquote language model. But they have created a closed ended loop or closed process. So where you can keep your information isolated and not used in their quote unquote learning activity. So that helps you in terms of security if that's an issue. That's something new that ChatGPT has come out with. And the second thing I would say with AI, we spent a lot of time in Nigeria before we even did any data collection using our application, which is AI based, in talking to our implementing partners, our stakeholders about what we wanted to do. And this was much so a proof of concept study. We really wanted to see what can this do in terms of the type of data it can collect and is it appropriate or not appropriate. Now, in the communities we work, there's quite a lot of concern over people losing their jobs with the use of AI. And valid, we did not dismiss that at all. And we wanted to explain how we were using AI and the narrow lane in which we were working with in terms of our application that had an AI component. We really wanted to explain to our partners what we were going to do in the field. We used a phone. We were showing them that we were using image segmentation, a process through which we take a picture and then the algorithm reads the picture, segments it into items so that we could count them and identify them. That's primarily what we were doing in our sort of monitoring activity of warehouses. And I think once they saw how we were doing the activity and they went with us to the warehouse and we jointly collected data quickly, they were able to maybe feel more comfortable and understand A, the limitations of our work and B, sort of our process. And out of the 6 warehouses that we invited to participate, 4 said yes. And I think the 5th one had said no because of the constraints in the process of getting permission, which was quite lengthy and our activity was short. So we would not be able to get consent for that. So, and let me stop there by saying that I think that just if we spend more time at the front end, involve our stakeholders in the design phase, regardless of the new technology innovation we're testing, the feedback they provide is invaluable because it really allows you to sort of sharpen your study or your activity, improve your data, and make it a more participatory process, which is honestly a win-win for everyone. We wanted to make it very open. We wanted to keep the lines of communication open, but also the data and the information we were gathering. So we had pause and reflect along the way. We shared what we were capturing along the way, and we met with stakeholders and our client as well, who was also very nervous about us using AI, by the way.
Thank you, Caroline. It's quite fascinating, and I'm sure people will try to reach out to you after this podcast. I will hand over to my colleague, Elena.
Thank you, Valentine. Caroline, indeed fascinating, and it's very interesting to hear how you run the test for accuracy of results produced by AI, including bias. But beyond ChatGPT, which recently has been discussed a lot, if you could tell partners, stakeholders, including donors, why AI, generative and non-generative, is or could be beneficial to development work, especially for the area of ML, what would you tell them?
You know, I think we've just begun to scratch the surface. Like AI is probably here to stay in some capacity or another. It's already present in many things that we might think are, you know, regular non-AI things. So whenever you do a search on Google, there's an AI in the background. Whenever you are searching for a movie on Netflix, there is an AI trying to help you find that extra show that you're looking for that's very much so like your very first one. They're already in there. They're already working in the banking system and in many other places. They already exist. And they're sort of hidden from us. We don't even know they're in our background. In the medical profession, they're also starting to use more complicated algorithms for surgery and surgical practices with their robotic activities. I think for monitoring especially, we have to collect a vast amount of data and process a vast amount of data very quickly. Usually it's a monthly activity, a monthly reporting. And stakeholders and clients and donors, they really want to know, is your activity on track? Is it going in the right direction? Is it moving towards that impact or outcome that they placed as a goal or a target? And so to process information quickly, usually you need very large teams. Very large teams are very expensive. They also have a large footprint and they can be a big burden on the individual who you're collecting data from or the organization who you're working with to collect the information from. As everyone knows, there's a huge burden. There's a huge fatigue level for answering surveys, for answering interviews. Really, nobody wants to do those anymore, and rightly so. So if we can find ways to make everything sort of a little bit more faster, but more efficient, reduce the burden on those who we're collecting data from, and sort of make our teams a little bit leaner and reduce their footprint, but also through their exposure to dangerous situations. In our case, third-party monitoring, we tend to work only in very non-permissive environments. Then I would say we should definitely test these types of technologies and innovations. And I say that openly test because if it doesn't work, let's not use it. Let's test something else, or let's test it under different conditions or under different parameters to see where it does work, where it is appropriate, and then use it to supplement our traditional, our regular activities. So I'm not necessarily saying AI in our case for monitoring will replace all monitoring, but it can be very useful to augment our data. Maybe it gives us information a little quicker or details about information. In the case of monitoring, we can now build 3D models of the warehouse. Now that's awesome because if we can't get to the warehouse that month or in several months, we can ask our partner, can you just take a few pictures of what's in the warehouse? We have a 3D model. We can then build how full the warehouse is, what items are in the warehouse, how much is in the warehouse. And, you know, in terms of entry, exit, safety zones, lighting, all that. And that's usually just if we have one big giant capture of data at the front end of the warehouse. So if we can't get to it later, we can then just use that model to help us figure out how much is in the warehouse for emergency events, particularly resource allocation, transfer supply management. I think that can be really helpful. So I would say we should be a little bit more experimental and in a small scale, of course, and with the input and participation of our partners so that we can test where it is appropriate and where it isn't. And to the extent that that's, I think, one of the gaps we have, we still don't know where we shouldn't be using it. And I think that's very important.
Thank you, Caroline. I hope that our listeners appreciate your advice on this dimension. Finally, I would like to ask you what you could suggest to young and emerging evaluators entering the field of evaluation or already starting in this career and who wish to develop in the monitoring, evaluation, and learning field. How AI can help them to grow? How can they use it smart in their work and career?
Well, I would first say, if there are young people out there thinking about joining evaluation and monitoring, please come on over. I would say come on over to the dark side, but it's not. It's a wonderful space to work in. It is exciting. It really has a little bit of everything. If you like doing research, it has a research component. If you like talking and meeting sort of community members, new people, new cultures, you know, this is where it's at. And I would say monitoring is exploding in terms of its need for expert specialists because we're doing so much more with it. And, you know, that is in big demand, at least by many of the donors that I work with. They really are growing their monitoring activity, even maybe more so than evaluation. I think evaluations are really important. They tend to be very expensive, but critical in activities in terms of determining whether you're really achieving that impact that you're trying to get. I would say, from my experience, most of the young people I've worked with and the youth that I've sort of been lucky enough to collaborate with, they come with so many ideas way beyond what I could even imagine. So if you're on a team and you have the opportunity to add young people to your team, and I don't mean this young just in age, I mean just someone who maybe is just new to monitoring evaluation, they come with such a fresh mind of ideas and things to test and do. I think that's why I've been lucky in the work that I've been doing. My team members are new and emerging evaluation specialists and monitoring specialists, and they just come in with sort of this risk-taking process or mindset. And I would say everyone should have a little bit of that. It's the ability to don't be scared to fail. Don't be scared to try something and if it doesn't work. And in our area and field, and especially with our donors, because the funding we have is precious, it's very limited. It's not sort of unlimited. And so I would say just be mindful of that, of course, but also, you know, try and work with your stakeholders, with your funder to let you test some of these new things. And typically, if it's a something small, contained, they will be open to that because the learning that happens through that process is really to everyone's benefit. And then the last thing I would say to sort of all the young people I've worked with is be bold and share your thoughts and ideas. I know it's hard sometimes if you're in a team and you're surrounded by a lot of senior people or you feel they're senior, maybe you might not feel comfortable sharing your ideas or your thoughts. But I would say just try to be encouraged by the fact that most people really want to hear your thoughts and want new ideas, especially in the use of AI. I think most college students are more comfortable and familiar with AI, with ChatGPT than my generation is or the current practitioners that are out there. They're already using it in school. It's already probably part of their process. So they're going to come in very comfortable and very knowledgeable about what sort of these large language models are and what they aren't. And I think that can be very beneficial to your activity and team. So anyway, I welcome and invite anyone who's thinking about becoming an evaluation or monitoring specialist, please join us. We certainly would love to have sort of a growth in our field. And I think, like I said, young people just come with so many great ideas and just creative and innovative thoughts and models and ways to collect data and ways to address issues. I certainly have experienced that both in the South Sudan activity as well in my Nigeria activity. My Nigeria activity, my two analysts are junior analysts. They're the ones who went to the field. They're the ones who collect the data, and they really solved and sent really awesome suggestions for solving our issues in real time as we were in the field. So yeah, I hope that maybe gives people a little sort of incentive to come and join us in monitoring and evaluation. Thank you.
Thank you, Caroline. I'm sure that our younger listeners find your words encouraging and very exciting. Now I pass the word to Valentine.
I could not agree more. That's right. And I'm sure this broadcast has encouraged a lot of people to look at ChatGPT. Still, many people are fascinated by it. Many people use it for fun stuff, but there are real and practical implications for ML, and especially in the field of monitoring. We are very grateful for your time today, Caroline, and also for our listeners for tuning in and listening to another exciting Eval Edge podcast. So thank you and goodbye, everybody, and good night.